Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Today on the Savage Nation, we're going to talk about tilting at windmills. Tilting at windmills. Many of you know what that means because you've read Don Quixote either in high school or in college. This should be required reading. Of course, it isn't today. It's reading about how evil America is and how wonderful the third world is. But tilting at windmills is an English idiom, and it means attacking imaginary enemies or fighting otherwise unwinnable battles. Now, what do they mean by tilting? It comes from the Spanish concept of jousting, and it originated in the novel Don Quixote. And in that novel, Don Quixote fights windmills that he imagines to be giants. Quixote sees the windmill blades as the giants' arms. And in the novel, it's written like this: just then they came in sight of 30 or 40 windmills that rise from the plain. And no sooner did Don Quixote see them than he said to his squire, "Fortune is guiding our affairs better than we ourselves could have wished. Do you see over yonder, friend Sancho, 30 or 40 hulking giants? I intend to do battle with them and slay them. With their spoils we shall begin to be rich, for this is a righteous war, and the removal of so foul a brood from off the face of the earth is a service God will bless." "What giants?" asked Sancho Panza. "Those you see over there," replied his master, "with their long arms. Some of them have arms 2 leagues in height, in length." "Take care, sir," said Sancho. "Those over there are not giants, but windmills. Those things that seem to be their arms are sails, which when they're whirled around by the wind, turn the millstone." Now, why am I talking about tilting at windmills? Who am I referring to, class? In the graduate school of the Savage Nation, where more questions are asked than answers given, I'm going to ask you, the audience, to tell me who I'm referring to when I refer to tilting at windmills. And while you're pondering this and calling me at 1-800-449-8255, I'm going to read to you again another passage from Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. The president made another sign of the T and sat down. The service had begun. The dedicated Soma tablets were placed in the center of the table. The loving cup of strawberry ice cream Soma was passed from hand to hand, and with the formula, everyone chanted, "I drink to my annihilation. I drink to my annihilation. I drink to my annihilation. I drink to my annihilation." And then to the accompaniment of the synthetic orchestra of the first Solidarity hymn was sung, "Ford, we are 12, O make us one, like drops within the social river. O make us now together run as swiftly as thy shining flivver." 12 yearning stanzas, and then the loving cup was passed a second time. "I drink to the greater being" was now the formula. All drank. Tirelessly the music played, the drums beat, the crying and clashing of the harmonies were an obsession in the melted bowls. The second solidarity hymn was sung. "Come, greater being, social friend, annihilating 12 in one. We long to die, for when we end, our larger life has but begun." Again 12 stanzas, but this time the soma had begun to work. Eyes shone, cheeks were flushed. The inner light of universal benevolence broke out on every face in happy, friendly smiles. Even Bernard felt himself a little melted, and so forth and so on. Then the president later on gives a signal. The chorus breaks out into the third solidarity hymn. "Feel how the greater being comes. Rejoice and in rejoicings die. Melt in the music of the drums, for I am you, and you are I." And then if you read on, you find out in the Brave New World, there are slogans that are continuously repeated, such as "Orgy, porgy, Ford and fun, kiss the girls and make them one, boys at one with girls at peace, orgy, porgy gives release." And then, of course, the orgies began. And then there are slogans that are given out. And the slogans say things like, everyone belongs to everybody. Promiscuity is everyone's duty. Work, earn, buy. History is bunk. Most historical facts are unpleasant. Everyone belongs to everybody. Promiscuity is everyone's duty. Work, earn, buy. History is bunk. Most historical facts are unpleasant. Everyone belongs to everybody. Promiscuity is everyone's duty. Work, earn, buy. History is bunk. Most historical facts are unpleasant. What am I talking about today? Tilting at windmills. I'm reading from Brave New World. And yet, I haven't made one reference to anything political, have I? Or have I? Have I referred once to the hypnopodia of the campaign of the invisible invented man, Obama, the man who nobody knows who he is, except the bag men in Chicago and the Middle Eastern money men? Or how about the woman from Arkansas who has tried to reinvent herself, but whose facade has finally crumbled off like bad plaster, or shall I say like bad stucco, and we see the rotting wood underneath the stucco? Shall we talk about that, or is there any relationship here to Don Quixote of Brave New World? Who am I talking about when I say tilting at windmills? Mike, Caney W., the first up. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, love the show, Michael. Don Quixote is who you're talking about, jousting at windmills.
No, I'm not. I told you it's from Don Quixote, so you haven't answered the question. In other words, I'm talking about tilting at windmills. I refer to Don Quixote, so you can't call the classroom and tell the professor we're talking about Don Quixote. I already said that. What's the allegory? What am I talking about when I say tilting at windmills? I can get down to what you're ready for. I can give you the Rush Limbaugh level.
Oh, those Democrats. Well, we got to defeat them. You see, if we defeat them and we Republicans win, why then the world will be perfect. It'll be a Gulfstream world. But we can't let those evil Democrats win. No, we're gonna defeat them. Why, they're coming apart. Why, the wheels are coming off the wagon. Whoa, the Republicans are going to win. Republicans good. Democrats bad. Democrats bad. Republicans good.
If you want that kind of show, I'm going home. So it's up to you, boys and girls of the Savage Nation. Either you turn your brains on or you turn your brains off, or if the brains are off, leave them off. But if there's no one out there with the intellectual capacity to discuss what I'm talking about, I'm going off the air. I'm telling you, I'm going to do this every day because I'm not going to do this anymore because I feel as though I'm tilting at windmills. It doesn't mean I'm smarter than you or I'm better than you or I'm too good for you. It means I am sick of tilting at windmills and I'm not going to do it anymore. And that's all there is to it. I'll try one more caller. WOR, Bob, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. The second piece you read, there were just three things that popped in my head that maybe I misheard what you read or something, but I think there was flivver and history is bunk that was mentioned in there, and that just screamed Henry Ford to me. I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason.
Well, I was reading flashcards, some of which were from Brave in the World and some of which I actually made up. Everyone belongs to everybody. Promiscuity is everyone's duty. Work, earn, buy. History is bunk. I don't know whether it's in Brave in the World. I found notes in the book, whether they're in there or I made them up. I don't really know anymore because we're living basically in Epsilonville right now. We are living in Epsilonville. We're almost there. You understand what I'm saying, of course.
It's scary. It's just like it's everything.
When you listen to the shills for international socialism, and all they talk about is how much they're going to give to the average person in America if they're elected. Is that your idea of leadership? It can't be. It's impossible to believe that these two people could be running for the presidency of the United States in an age of Islamic terror. It's impossible.
The whole world, to me, it's all started a whirl. It's like watching a toilet bowl flush, and it started in 1965, and it just like... You know, I'm 57.
Well, why do you say 65? Why is that the defining year for you?
Okay, there's a car similarity in there, too, but it's just I entered high school in the fall of 64, I guess it was. You know, cars were big and huge and everything, and then the Mustang came out in 64, 65, and everything just sort of started going downhill from there.
Well, 65, I have a 65 Cadillac amongst the cars I own, and I use it as a symbol. It was, to me, the symbol of the last of the great American cars. There are still some good American cars, but there are no great American cars. That was a great American car. The glass was thick. I affectionately say when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. But remember what was beginning in 65. It was the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War was the beginning of the unraveling of the United States of America. Not so much because the war itself was wrong, and it was wrong. There was no reason for it. None whatsoever. You look back, I don't think there's a Vietnam vet listening to this show who came away from that war who can give me a reason why we fought the Vietnamese. I can't think of a reason. Can you?
No, they weren't going to swim across the Pacific and hurt us.
No, but even still, let's look at Vietnam today. It's a communist nation, but who are they threatening? Nobody. In fact, Americans go there today for God knows what reason. So this whole myth of the domino theory put forward by McNamara and his cronies in the Johnson White House, or excuse me, put forward first in the Kennedy White House, let me be very clear, who got us into Vietnam. It's the Democrats who always get us in the war and the Republicans who used to get us out of it, although today there's no difference, so it's not a Democrat-Republican thing. The Vietnam War unraveled America. It unraveled the moral fiber of America. It unleashed the communist revolution in this country. They were basically always here, but they finally had justification for the hatred of this country. I don't think we've ever recovered from those years. Thanks for the call. It's 17 minutes after the hour. If you'd rather not talk about stuff as, I don't know, like this, you know, we can talk about spaghetti for all I care. You can talk about dogs. I may or may not go there. I may just leave early today and go home. I just may do a Powhana today. I am in such not a mood to do this. I am not in the mood to tilt at windmills anymore. And frankly, I'm a very intuitive man. You know, I'm not like the kind of guy who one day is going to say I'm retiring on December 31st, 2008. What's going to happen on this show, I'll tell you right now, is one day I'm going to get on the air and say this is the last show you're ever going to hear. Goodbye. And that's going to be it. I'll walk out and you'll never hear from me again. I'll shut the website down. I'll shut the radio show down. I'll never write another book. I'll never speak another word. I will take a vow of silence and disappear. I'll be back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about Tilting at Windmills, the novel Don Quixote. I read it in high school. I didn't really understand it. I knew it was about some Spaniard in in armor, a suit of armor, and he had a gopher called Sancho Panza, and he charged windmills with a jousting pole. I had no idea what it meant. I guess it means a lot of things, and why it's a novel, it's considered a classic, is because it refers on a small scale to all of us tilting at windmills in our futile daily activities, which leads you to the Buddhist viewpoint, which is to meditate and do nothing, because you're doing nothing anyway. And only by realizing you're doing nothing do you have a chance of achieving peace. I mean, that's one view. I think that's the essence of one aspect of Buddhist philosophy. Not that I'm a Buddhist. Or tilting at windmills. What does that mean? Barack Obama is tilting at windmills. Hillary Clinton is tilting at windmills. They're attacking imaginary targets. Quixote says, "I intend to do battle with them and slay them. With their spoils, we shall begin to be rich, for this is a righteous war, and the removal of so foul a brood from off the face of the earth is a service God will bless." So there's the socialist radical left in the Democrat Party wanting to get the rich. Absolutely sure that once the rich are all poor, the world will be a perfect place. Tilting at windmills. Or conversely, the liberal would argue that George Bush is tilting at windmills in his imaginary war against Islamofascists. Now, of course, we understand, those of us who know history, that the Islamofascists declared war on the West soon after the Quran was given to Muhammad in the 7th century, because the book itself tells the loyal to go out and convert the world. I mean, be very clear about it. Make no mistake about it. Don't confuse yourself. Now, just as most modern Christians don't take the Old Testament literally, and just as most modern Jews, even the Orthodox Jews, don't take the Old Testament literally, most modern Muslims don't take the Quran literally. Unfortunately, there is about a one percenter of 1 billion people who do take it literally. Now, 1% of 1 billion people is what, 10 million people or something of that number? So it's a quite a number of people who believe literally in every word of the Quran, and they enact it. For example, they cut the heads off infidels, which you've seen. That's not an invention. It's a reality. They cut Nick Berg's head off as they chanted to Allah, and they cut the heads off others. Remember Zarqawi? Well, that's why Bush went to war with these animals, these throwbacks. In England right now, they have a problem. You've got Muslim doctors who refuse to wash their hands above the elbow because they'd have to raise their sleeves, and that's considered somehow an infidel act. These are throwbacks who don't belong in a hospital. I'd throw them out. I'd say you're living in the modern world. Go back to Junkistan where you came from if you want to practice medicine that's going to transmit bacteria. Get out of the hospital. But the British lost their nerve somewhere along the time that Diana arrived on the scene. I'm not saying she did it to them. She was a symptom of the loss of the British steel in there. You know what? Something happened to England around the time that she arrived on the scene, and consequently she was there just in time to do the final coup de grace on the British pride. So there it is, 1-800-449-8255. What would you like to talk about? I mean, I'm rambling on and on. What I've decided is all I've been doing for these 15 years is tilting at windmills, and nothing has happened. Things have gotten worse. I'm not depressed at all. I'm a realist. If the best the Republicans can come up with is an old hack like John McCain, let me turn the clock back a year ago. Would you believe that John McCain would be the heir apparent to the Republic, to Ronald Reagan or the Republican Party? I don't consider Ronald Reagan a great president, by the way. I consider him an average president. I know that's sacrilege, but I'll save that. You can call another show and complain about me if you want. I don't care. You can report me to the central office. Did we ever have a great president? I don't really know. I mean, I don't think a presidency can be great at all to begin with. I think there are too many checks and balances to produce a great man who could actually be great in office personally. They're functionaries, they're figureheads. But there's a huge gap between not being great and being John McCain. That's the best the Republicans can offer us? A border buster like John McCain? A budget buster like John McCain? And on the other side, can you believe it? An unknown man from the Chicago slums? Savage. The fix is in. The fix is in. We're all tilting at windmills if we think. It doesn't matter who you're voting for, frankly. We're tilting at windmills because the figureheads called presidents don't really make the decisions anyway. They get blamed for it, or they get rewarded for decisions made by the powers that be. And I don't really know who the powers that be. I have a suspicion. I've heard CFR, you know, Council on Foreign Relations, kind of a secretive group of bankers, fundamentally fronts for bankers. It's Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns. It's Wall Street that runs America. And what's good for Wall Street is good for America. At least they think so. Now, they've been stopped a few times. The United Arab Emirates were stopped. The Dubai ports deal was stopped. The attempted takeover again of the 3COM deal by the communist Chinese military. See, apparently, even Wall Street can be stopped occasionally by some of the men in the Pentagon. But I wouldn't say that this is going to be going on much longer. I would say that they'll track down with a vengeance. Let's put it to you this way. Although we can't find Osama bin Laden despite trillions of dollars being spent looking for him, Goldman Sachs will find out who it was in the Pentagon who shot down the 3COM deal, and he'll be drilled out of the military or the FBI or Homeland Security or Naval Intelligence. He won't be there for long. Catherine, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to say that although you are tilting at windmills, please don't stop talking, because those of us who are tilting beside you and have actually read Brave New World and Don Quixote really need somebody to talk to and to listen to. So don't stop talking.
But what good is talking? What good is all the talk when you have shills like Obama appear out of the mud, Hillary Clinton come back out of the muck, John McCain come back out of the toilet? What good is it if the swamp creatures have reappeared?
You can keep encouraging people like me.
Where's the new blood in American politics? You're telling me Obama's a new character? Obama is a ward politician from the suburbs of Chicago who is, well, he's put here. Let's put it to you that way. Don't believe he's here on his own. No man gets that far on his own.
No.
So it doesn't matter who wins, actually. It doesn't really matter. The apathy may be the correct answer to this election. Maybe the solution to it all. Maybe I should take an apathetic Buddhistic approach to the political arena. I might be a happier man. That might be the solution, is to become apathetic and care nothing about any of it, because it's all nothing. The powers that be are going to do what they want. And we should trust in them, because they're better than we are. After all, the guys who run Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs are better than you and I. They're smarter than you and I. Their families are better than yours and ours. They know more about the world than you and I do. They're better educated. They're more noble than you and I are. And therefore, the politicians really are just their marionettes and should remain so. What matters is the bottom line and how much they can stash away in various accounts around the globe and international banks. Certainly not in American banks, because they're shaky. As a result of their work, the banks are shaky. So make sure the money is elsewhere. And, you know, one can never have enough Gulfstream jets. You've got to understand that the primary rule motivating those after money is that it's way beyond money at this point. It's how many Gulfstreams have you given away, not only how many do you have in the family. Have you given a Gulfstream for Christmas? Have you given a Gulfstream for a bonus? Now, that's the mark of a true nobleman, is if giving away a Gulfstream. That's the mark of a really decent American, is whether or not you've given away enough Gulfstreams this year. And that's why I say we should leave it to the wonderful, fine folk on Wall Street. They always know what's best for America. And we, the little people, should continue to believe there's a difference between one party and the other, between one hack and another, between one judge and another. At the end of the day, does it really matter to you? We're on the Titanic. The Titanic is already on the way down, and we're on the rear deck here, and the band is playing on, and we're sitting here like it can be saved. Are you kidding me? Only a wholesale. Well, I'll stop right here because it's a commercial radio show, and I don't want to go any further than I've already gone. Only a wholesale, and you can fill in the rest of the paragraph. Breaking news. Another rape, another murder, another child abduction. Breaking news. It's news. It's news. Breaking news. News. I got the news for you. You got Huey Lewis in the news? Where's Huey Lewis in the news? Where's the Huey news in the news? Where's Huey Hughes in the news? Where's Newey Hughes in the blues? Where's Bluey news and Blues' news? Where is that? Play some Bluesy Newsy. And do you know what I'm talking about? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? I'm talking about tilting at windmills. I am talking about tilting at windmills, and I think I'm through tilting at windmills. And until I decide what I'm going to do with my brain and my voice and my, you know, my inner chi, I don't know. I mean, really, I just may take a long break, because I just – here's how I feel emotionally. As rational as I can be, and as lucid as I can be, and as insightful as I can be, I'm an extremely emotional creature as well. And right now my emotions are in ebb, possibly because I see the sellout of the political system. I mean, I knew Bush, what he was doing. I watched him for 7 years. I was not a Bush man from the year 2000. Go back to 2000 when he ran against Gore. I said, I have to go with him. I'll hold my nose. I know from his father where they're going to lead us. 2004, it was him versus the creature from the Black Lagoon. Kerry, I had to go with Bush again. And I told you that if you think Bush has caused disharmony and a disaster thus far, you've seen nothing yet. Because in the months that remain, you're going to see revolutionary things occur, such as stabbing the Serbs in the back, stealing a country from the Serbian people that's been part of them since the 13th century, and by the way, having the entire media on your side. What's interesting is the media that allegedly hates George Bush somehow agrees with him on stealing Kosovo from Serbia. How is that? Because it's all a charade. It's two-card Monty. It doesn't matter where you look. The P isn't there. Hartford, Connecticut, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to make three quick points. The first is, knowing your religious background, you're a devout Jewish man.
No, I'm not a devout anything, Mike. I got to tell you right now, don't confuse me with someone devout. I don't attend the house of worship. I don't believe in religious leaders. I believe that there is a God, one God. And I believe that I don't need to go to a religious institution to reach him. In fact, every time I've gone into one, I've lost them. But go on, please.
Yes, but that brings me to my second point. But I was just going to say that the Lord permits evil only for a greater good. So this all...
Well, okay, yeah, that's a very Christian viewpoint. I mean, I admire anyone who can forbear kind of evil. And some horrors that have been inflicted on humanity are unspeakable. And the only way to have gotten through them is to come up with that kind of fantasy, which is that God is punishing you in order to have you something better happen. All right, that's terrific. That's a great way to look at Auschwitz, is while seeing your baby thrown into an oven, that God has permitted that evil for something better to occur. All right, that's great. I'd rather have picked up a pickaxe and put it in a Nazi's head, frankly, and be shot on the spot, or you know, or something to that effect. I'd rather go in the sewer in Poland and fought the Nazis with whatever I had than be taken prisoner and killed, and tortured and killed. Now, that's all. I would have been in the sewer, I guess. Who knows where you would be? You don't know where you are. Once your spirit's broken, you don't know. But right now, the political media establishment is attempting to break our spirit, whether you know it or not. I don't think you understand this. They're trying to break our spirit by running these despicable sewer creatures for the presidency of the United States. I feel better having said that. I actually feel sane for the first time in 24 hours. The government media complex is trying to break our spirit by running these creatures from the Black Lagoon for the presidency. None of them are qualified to be the president as far as I'm concerned. None of them are a leader. None of them are going to be a shining light. They are just what they are, political hacks and fronts for something. You understand that? So now you want me to move on, I'll move on. Play a Blue Monday for a minute. I'll stay on the air. When we get to Wednesday, I'll come back. I'll be a new man.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
Here come Wednesday, I'm
yeah. To my side. My gal called, got to tell her that I'm out.
Go to 34.
We have learned to take a gram of soma whenever we feel out of sorts. Euphoric, narcotic, pleasantly hallucinant. It transports our minds into a beautiful sleep filled with wonderful images. It gives a soma holiday, thus preventing unnecessary impulses such as anger, jealousy, envy, anxiety.
And now try 38 for the people, will you please?
All right, here it is, soma distribution. In good order, please. Oh, hurry up there, stand in line for your soma. Oh, now don't grab enough for everybody. 1 gram for an evening's delight, 2 for a trip to the gorgeous east, and 4 for a weekend in paradise.
Stop! Stop!
Ford is a savage.
Listen, I beg you, lend me your ears. Don't take that horrible stuff. It's poison.
Mr. Savage, please. The people are waiting.
You're slaves, all of you. Don't you want to be men? Don't you want freedom?
Freedom? Ford Almighty, call the police.
Now, the soma of the political landscape is Barack Hussein Osama. Barack Hussein Osama is the political soma of the day. So from now on, if you refer to him, he will be called Osama. You understand that? Osama. 1-800-449-8255. I don't know. I think I'd rather talk about pasta than politicians. I'd rather talk about anything other than politicians. Can we talk about no, that's ridiculous. I'm going to get stupid calls now. I wouldn't listen to that if I were driving in a car. Was sitting at home. I want to hear some good red-blooded conservative radio. I want to hear attacks on liberals and support for Ronald Reagan. I want to hear that Ronald Reagan was the closest thing to God. Why he was good for everybody. Why he saved the world. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear somber references to Reagan. I want to see crocodile tears in the eyes of conservative talk show hosts whenever the name O'Reagan comes up. Cincinnati, Ohio. JC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you. Thank God what you're saying. I have scan the dial day in and day out and listen to just about every other end of the spectrum. And it's so wonderful for someone who considers himself right of the center to say what needs to be said, and that is that Ronald Reagan is not Moses.
Well, right. Well, none of us are, but I think he was a rather great con man. I mean, he was a wonderful, noble con man who did sort of bring down the Soviet Union, for better or for worse. God knows we've not yet seen what is going to emerge from the collapse of the old Soviet Union. In other words, that game isn't over yet. In other words, we might have been better off with the old Soviet Union than the new one that's being reformed under Putin. Let's put it to you that way. Now, why is it that you have some antipathy towards the great Reagan?
Well, I grew up technically in the Reagan era of the 80s, and I lived it firsthand, and some people seem to have forgotten. It's only been not even 20 years, barely 20 years, since the man was there. And people forget some of the downsides of his administration.
Right. Now, I'll remember something that I wrote. I remember I was a journal writer in those days. I didn't have a radio show. Which really, when you think about it, talk radio is sort of a daily journal if you don't read anyone's script and you do a lot of natural stuff from the top of your mind and from your life. So I don't have a written journal anymore. This is my written journal. But I remember in the 80s when I kept a daily journal writing from my heart about Ronald Reagan destroying the American farm, the small American farmer. And I remember that was the era of agribusiness, buying up and destroying through a monopoly tactics the family farmers. I remember farmers who shot themselves as their possessions were being auctioned off, their underwear, their rakes, their hoes, their tractors being auctioned off. And I knew it was Reaganomics that did it.
We still live in this perception, but they live in this perception that somehow the deficit spending concept is going to magically work, that eventually you try it long enough, it's somehow going to kick in, that if you continue to spend and spend and spend, and not bring anything into the government, that somehow it comes out even. You have to.
Well, I don't want to get into an economic discussion because at that point we're gonna hit a dead end. I'm certainly not a communist, nor am I a socialist. I believe in hard work, and I always have. And everything I've earned honestly, and I've took it from nobody. And in that regard, I'm just like my father. He died poor, but he died honest. He left the house, and he left some money, and he left my mother well enough to live with some support from myself and others. But the fact of the matter is he was not a rich man, but he taught me a few things. And one of the things he taught me is never take a penny from another man that isn't yours and keep your books balanced. That's all. I mean, that's the way he lived in those days. So in many ways, I know my balance sheet with people, and I don't need anyone to tell me I'm right or wrong. But the government is not an individual. The government's something different. Right now we have two shysters on the Democrat side promising the impossible to people, tilting at the windmills called George Bush and the Republican Party and the war. Those are windmills. It's all nonsense. They're just they're promising the world. And what can they actually deliver? God only knows. 1-800-449-8255. If you're going to talk about Barack Hussein Osama, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let us now, ladies and gentlemen, that we've covered the tilting at windmills and Brave New World. You know, for an American, I'm kind of classically educated. And consequently, I think my reference points are not the reference points of the average listener. I don't know how many of you actually read Don Quixote or even Brave New World. I mean, these were seminal books for so long, for so many decades. But I doubt that they're even taught anymore. And I don't think people understand that we're already living way past Brave New World. The Prozac today, Soma is Prozac. You understand that? The government that is described in Brave New World by Huxley, remember he wrote it in the 1930s, is here. Our government is fundamentally that government that he was talking about, this utopia where people are less perfect and more free. You understand? Well, excuse me, that's the society I want to return to, a society that is less perfect and more free. Right now, we're aiming towards a perfect society, which is impossible by definition. It's impossible to create a perfect society. Hitler tried it. Look where it ended up. Mussolini tried it. Look where it ended up. Stalin tried it. Look where it ended up. Pol Pot tried it. Look where it ended up. The Democrats are trying it, and that's where it's going to end up, the same way. Mountains of human skulls. That's right. That's where perfect societies end up. Mountains of human skulls. It always ends up that way. Because there can be no perfect man. There can be no perfect society. The communists always have promised a perfect society. And if you listen to these so-called debates now, you're listening to naked communism. I sit and I wonder how the American people can take it. How they can listen to this rubbish. Naked Marxism. I'm going to up the ante. Two wheelchairs in every household. Well, I'll throw in an oxygen tent. Well, that's very, very pecuniary of you, Obama, to only throw in an oxygen tent. If I'm elected, I'm going to throw in not only two wheelchairs and an oxygen tent, they're going to have a personal ambulance in their backyard with a driver. That's correct. And that driver will have been a Republican who owned his own house. Wow, says the audience. Perfect society. But again, this is probably too... See, if I really get into me right now, the mood I'm in, I don't think it's working in the radio business right now. This can't work. It's impossible. It can't work because the American people want to hear more about a rape or a murder. They've been conditioned by the Australian. They need a daily rape or a murder or a starlet showing her undergarments. The Australian has conditioned the American people to needing a rape or a murder or a starlet showing her underpants. They must have scandal. They must have scandal. It's part of their daily dish. They must have scandal. They must have it every day. They cannot have anything but scandal on a daily basis because the Australian has conditioned you to needing that. You must open that paper and get that scandal. It must be a rape or a murder. So the bug-eyed woman on CNN can tell you with utter sincerity about this rape or this murder. Or Scarface on the other channel can tell you with utter sincerity how important this rape or this murder or this abduction really is and how important it is to the human race and how different it is from any other rape or murder or abduction to the human race. Because you need it. You must have it because the Australian has taught you you need it. You must have it. It's your daily soma. It's your drug. You must have scandal. You must have dirt. You must have salaciousness or you can't go to sleep at night because the Australian has taught you that's what you need. And since I don't trade in that stock, I don't know that I have anything to offer you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
An Unbrave New World. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We've been talking about Don Quixote's great novel, The great novel Don Quixote, where tilting at windmills was first described perfectly. Okay. Fights windmills that he imagines to be giants. Quixote sees the windmill blades as the giant's arms, but he's only tilting at windmills. He thinks they're real and he's going to slay them, very much as we are hearing in this campaign, where they're all tilting at windmills. You understand? So we can move on. Now time for some housekeeping. Many of you cannot find michaelsavage.com, and that's because we've switched a few things around. You have to just go back to your favorites where it already said michaelsavage.com, and instead of referring you to something else, you got to put in michaelsavage.com. It'll go directly to the page. We're still there. We're bigger than ever. With regard to donations for the defense fund, the addresses have changed. The case is the same. My lawyer is the same. Nothing's changed other than on March 7th, we finally have our first day in court. And I will inform you that day, God willing, of what happens. And we'll let you know right away what happens. The first step, the first legal step. It's cost a ton of money thus far to even get to step one. But that's the way the courts are set up. That's the way the system operates. And I want to just thank all of you. We have almost 25,000 Americans have gone to my website and made a donation. And we're funded pretty good. But I don't know how long this is going to take. I'm ready for it. If I have to go into my own pocket again, I will. If I have to go to a bank and borrow, I will. I'm gonna beat them. I'm going to expose them. I'm going to expose the connections between this front group, CAIR, and the Muslim Brotherhood and the danger we're in. I didn't ask for this war. I didn't like what they were doing. I didn't like their showboating. I didn't like their suing everyone on planet Earth. I didn't like their lawsuit against the airlines and the John Does with that fake game that the imams played. I didn't like any of their act. But I figured it wasn't my battle. I figured it was the battle of the government to take care of them, not me. Little did I know that the government was interested instead in arresting mafioso from the 1970s for selling pizza with tainted dough. What can I do? How did I know that they would bust into a social club on Mulberry Street instead of breaking into an Islamberg somewhere? How did I know that? And little did I know that these people would come after me and try to destroy my radio career. And I'm not going to yield. I'm not going to yield until I win. And I want to thank you for helping me. And if you want to help, go on to michaelsavage.com. Again, I want to reiterate, if you already have michaelsavage.com plugged in somewhere, well, you have to unplug it and replug it. In other words, type it in again, and we'll go right to my website. 1-800-449-8255. What would you like to talk about? I think I'm through with the politics for the moment. I think I'd rather talk about microphones. I was just looking through a catalog of broadcast audio gear. For years, I've used this microphone. It's courtesy of this microphone that you can hear me. It's the standard workhorse microphone that's used in talk radio. It's the Electro Voice RE27ND, which I've used for years. Oh, I don't silver plate it or gold, you know, embroider. I don't do any of that stuff. It's the stock RE27. It's a reasonably priced microphone, like under $500. And I think I'm going to shift to a Neumann because it's $1,500. It has to be better. We're going to try that soon. We'll get the Neumann over here. Be like sort of trying the Mercedes 600S of the microphone world. I want to see if it's different, if it changes my voice. You know, that might be a fun show segment, is to get five different microphones and plug and unplug them and do a test with the audience and ask them, say, what do you like best? Shure, Neumann, Electro Voice. Can we do that one of these days, play with microphones on the Savage Nation, or is that too? Because I'm giving up on politics. I won't do it. Wow, look at this. Whoa, $5,200. I want that one. The Neumann U87 40th Anniversary Edition. Best known and widely used Neumann microphone. Standard of the industry since 1967. Oh, God, that's a bad year. The current U87 is equipped with an LF roll-off switch to reduce proximity effect and a 10 dB pad, cardioid, omnidirectional, and figure eight patterns. Wow, that may be something to play with. I have a Neumann diaphragm condenser mic that someone gave me as a present years ago. I've never used it because it's too sensitive. They fundamentally use these microphones in studios where you sing, not where you talk and you walk around into the radio kitchen and you get an old piece of pizza with mold on it. You can hear the refrigerator door slamming. Oh, my God. What do you want to talk? I'm finished with politics. That's it. I'm not buying into the racket. Let's leave that to the intellects of the political landscape. Let's leave that to the real top brains who really, really savor this kind of stuff. Houston, Texas. Christine, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I'm hearing your discouragement about the calls on the windmills and you wanting to talk about spaghetti rather than politics and the discouragement about it. When you boil a pot of spaghetti, if you ever have, it can be a perfect...
Wait, that asking Michael Savage if he's ever have boiled a pot of spaghetti is quite an insult, but go on.
Okay, you can have the perfect pot of spaghetti and pull a strand out after you've drained it in the colander. Similar to when you're identifying a politician, maybe...
You mean if it sticks to the wall, you vote for it?
Yeah, no. If you can pull it out without it breaking,
That's funny. No, that's a funny analogy. Listen, I, for years, have been threatening to do a an internet cooking show where as I cook a dish, I talk about politics. I could do it as an internet radio television show, you know, right on my internet, on my michaelsavage.com. Maybe that'd be fun for me. It might be a new relief for me to put on a cooking hat and have a camera set up. You know, instead of internet porn, it would be internet cooking.
Okay. But let me make my last point about the candidates today and the pot of spaghetti that you've drained and the noodles.
Well, hold it. You hit a key word. In my day, politicians used to promise a chicken in every pot. Today, they're promising pot in every chicken. All right, go on. I couldn't resist that one. I've used it before.
Okay, it's kind of...
I should say pot for every chicken, but go on.
A pot for every chicken.
No, not a pot. Pot for every chicken. Marijuana. In other words, they're promising pot for every chicken as a reversal of chicken for every pot. So what's your point?
That was more in the old days, but go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Pot. What are you talking about, spaghetti and pulling it out of a pot? What do you mean? I'm going to move along. I got a migraine already. It just happened. I knew it was going to happen. I start out with Brave in the World, and I end up in a spaghetti pot. It happens. It destroys me. What I'm starting to feel like is my senior year in high school, I was not a good student. School didn't come easily to me. I mean, there were kids who were whiz kids at memory. They became lawyers and accountants and accordionists. And ventriloquists of one sort or another. I had a struggle because I didn't have a great memory for just random facts. It made no sense to me. I was always trying to figure things out. Who had time to stuff my brain with random facts? You know, so I didn't memorize well, so I didn't take tests well. I had a lot of test anxiety. To this day, I have test anxiety. So I stuck it out. So it's the senior year in high school, Jamaica High School, and already it's May. And some kids are playing hooky, and they're going up to Rye Amusement Park for the day. Did I want to go with them? I wanted to, but I had to study for the Regents exam, which was a standardized test that was really great and very important. And, of course, people didn't want a standardized exam because it actually tested if you knew anything. God forbid you should have tested to see if a kid knew anything. So I stuck it out, and they went to Rye Amusement Park, and they came back the next day sunburned and happy. I think I missed the most important day of my life. I should have cut school and gone to Rye Amusement Park with those kids. But that's how I feel today on the radio. I feel like just like hanging up the microphone and getting out of here for a week. The problem is there's nowhere to go. You know how they say the gift, what do you give a man who has everything? Well, what do you do for a man who thinks he's traveled everywhere, particularly in the age of the internet and radio and television? What in the world do I want to go anywhere for, is what I ask myself. What is anywhere that I want to go to? The only reason to travel is for either weddings or funerals or christenings or bar mitzvahs or something to that effect. You know, there's no other reason to travel fundamentally. I can't imagine any reason to travel. Now, if you're younger than me, don't get me wrong. I probably just lost another advertiser without even knowing it. Last week I said something, I lost one. And this week I said something, I lost another. You win some, you lose some. But, I mean, I don't think about advertisers when I'm talking. Most of you travel. Most of you think that your great reward is sitting on an airplane in a seat not large enough for a collie for several hours and eating food not fit for a pit bull in a training camp and breathing air not fit for a prisoner in the gulag, and then getting to a hotel where there's usually construction going on next to your room, sleeping on a mattress with other people's DNA on the bed cover, and then coming back with a very bad cough and cold for 6 months. That's not my idea of happiness. Sorry. Not my idea of happiness. Now, of course, you can do it the way the politicians do it, which is with private jet while talking about the people. I've done the private jet. They're fun. They're nice. They're great. They're wonderful. But you're still getting somewhere, and you have to want to go there. That's all. I've done it a few times. It's fun. It's nice to sit there, you know, with your own food and whatever. And the first couple of times, look at me. Oh, you pat yourself on the head and look at the. But fundamentally, you have to want to go where you're going. I mean, who could enjoy that? What's the big deal? Again, if you're younger, these are big things. Ultimately, I'm just sitting here waiting for the last voyage. And I hope it's, you know, 30 years from now or whatever. I don't know where does that last voyage go? Does anyone know where it goes? Anyone come back from there? Maybe I'm at the Hindu phase of life where you leave all earthly possessions and go off into the forest. I told you I'm classically educated. I don't sound it because I have the voice of a longshoreman and the vernacular of a bartender. But I'm actually classically educated. And the fact of the matter is, I've read some things of all of the five principal religions of the earth. And there's nice things in all of it and garbage in all of it and brainwashing in all of it. You know, you take what you want from each and whatever. And then you come up with your way, you know, and you sing my way at the end of the day if you're drunk enough with Frank Sinatra. But the thing about the Hindu religion that I remember, other than the women with all the arms and heads, which, of course, reminds me too much of women I've run away from all my life. Why are all their goddesses with too many hands and heads? I never understand that one. They were the ultimate anti-feminist, the Hindu. When you think about it, they always made women into like a creature with many hands and many heads. When you think about it, they're so anti-feminist. You know, there may be a time where they may have to break off the hands and the heads from Hindu statuettes because the feminists may take offense at it. The god Shiva has 17 hands and 3 heads. Are you implying, sir, that a woman is... But there was something in the Hindu religion that stuck, which is that at the age of something or other, I don't know what the age was, a man is supposed to leave his earthly possessions, I guess leave them to the woman with 3 heads and 17 arms, and walk off into the forest and get ready for the next world. But I'm not there yet. I'll be right back. Savage. Mercedes, I give you Mercedes. You marry me, you get Mercedes. Two Mercedes. 3 Mercedes. I used to love that music when I was in Fiji. I used to turn on the Hindi stations in Fiji. I had no idea what they were singing. I think it was about she has more than me. Why don't you give me? I will give you if you marry me, but it doesn't matter. Give me more. I want more. Give me more. I must have more. I have more. Mercedes. I don't know. It's just something like that. It just shows you I'm not as culturally sensitive as I should be, I suppose. I haven't been brainwashed sufficiently to not enjoy my life, you know, by enjoying my life in the little ways I can enjoy my life. You see, enjoying your life by using your own imagination, your own sense of humor, is actually a threat to the gross domestic product. And that's why it's discouraged. How dare you use your own sense of humor? You mean you haven't gone to the degenerates of Hollywood for your orgasmic entertainment moment? You mean you entertain yourself? Sir, that's a crime in the new America. Joey, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's a pleasure to talk to you. First of all, if you peel an onion, you peel the whole onion. And while you're cooking your gravy...
But what are we talking about? How do we go... What are we doing now?
I just wanted to spit off this real quick because you were talking about spaghetti.
Well, what does an onion have to do with it?
If you peel an onion and you cook your sauce with the onion in the sauce, and when your sauce is done and you pull the onion out, it gives it an outrageous flavor. I'd just like you to try it.
Well, you put the onion in without the skin or with the skin?
No, you peel the onion.
Yeah, you put it in whole, like a round ball of onion?
You could do it or you could cut it in half. I just throw the whole onion in.
Nice. All right, I'll try that. I can't wait to boil sauce now with an onion in it. Great. Okay. See, these are the important things in life. Everyone has their way of getting through life. This guy doesn't need soma. He just needs onions in his tomato sauce. And you know what? You have to admire a man who gets his pleasure out of simple things. I'm not mocking him either. Don't think I'm mocking the man. There are men who actually look forward to cooking a dinner for themselves. I used to be that way. I made a paella 3 weeks ago. I haven't cooked in 10 years like this. Whoa. I don't know why I did it. It was so good. Politically, there's nothing of interest to me whatsoever. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing of interest to me in the entire world. Hillary Clinton, no thank you. Barack Hussein Osama, not interested. Tom McCann, not interested. Are you interested in this? Am I the only one in the media who's not interested in that? I can't imagine you could be interested in this. I can't imagine. Highlights of the latest Democratic debate between candidates Hussein Osama and Hillary Clinton. Ugh, I'm not going to even play any of that. NAFTA. Can you imagine they're arguing over NAFTA in an age of Islamofascism? It's unbelievable to me. It's nonsense. It's utter nonsense. Tilting at windmills, and you're watching the blood sport. It means
savage.
Oh, brings up so many memories. Goat curry. I don't ever want to eat a goat curry again. Poor goat. God, why am I dog? I'll become a vegetarian. Make up for my sins.
Mercedes, you give me more Mercedes. She has Mercedes in Fresno. I have no Mercedes. I have only Buick.
Oh. All right, here comes another boycott now. And here comes another world religion after me. Because no one has a sense of humor anymore. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Muslim medics refuse to roll up their sleeves in hygiene crackdown. It's against their religion. Well, when a religion is living in the past and it risks public health, what you do is you throw the bums out of the surgical ward and you say, go back and practice it in Junkistan. You can't do that here because you're going to put germs on the patient, moron. But I told you, there is no England anymore. So what do you expect to happen? Expect to go into an emergency room one of these days. And you know, I'm afraid to go into hospitals to begin with. When I was younger, I mean, a hospital had doctors and real doctors. They went to legitimate American medical schools. Occasionally, a guy would go to one in Guadalajara to become a plastic surgeon. I know that. But by and large, they went to legitimate American medical schools, and you could count on a certain standard of medicine. And you could, if you supplemented it with alternative medicine, you were in pretty good shape. Now you go into an American hospital. You know, you got to press 10 for English. They got dirty smocks. You can't believe what goes on in there now. This is already where we're going. Now, you can imagine where we're going to end up with Hussein Osama and Hillary Clinton promising the world to everybody. So there it is. You go in there. They don't speak English. They got dirty smocks, dirty stethoscopes that you don't want to even let them put it on your chest. That's what's going on today. My luck. My luck. What else do we have on the website? Surgeon accused of speeding death of man to harvest organs. Did you ever read The Doctor and Devils? The Doctor and the Devils? I was too fast. I have to speak more slowly. I'm on radio right now. I am thinking out loud after all, but I am speaking. Did anyone ever read The Doctor and Devils? Whoever can tell me who wrote The Doctor and Devils wins a free prize. Quickly, I want to see if anyone listening to the show ever read a book. I know it can't be George Bush calling, but there must be somebody out there who actually read The Doctor and the Devils. It couldn't be a candidate for the presidency. You know, they're too busy trying to control the world to have read a book. Who wrote The Doctor and the Devils and what is it about? And I'm going to go back. Play the Hindi music for a minute. I want to go back for a second to something I was getting to before. I used to spend hours in the rain in Fiji in seedy hotel rooms. Seedy hotel rooms waiting for the weather to break so I can go out and collect plants, listening to Hindi music on the radio. And it was a great time for me because there was nothing else to do but relax. I mean, maybe I should go back to Fiji for a while. Speaking of Fiji, here's where my mind was going with this. I have a new acquaintance who's from Fiji. And we've spoken a few times. And he comes from an island where there is firewalking, the island of Benga. I've happened to have been on Benga. I've been on 100, I think over 100 Fijian islands. I've collected plants on over 70 islands. I think, I don't remember, quite a few islands. Even professional botanists who were experts at this were shocked to find that I had been on so many islands collecting plants. But then when I get into something, I'm pretty fanatic about it. So anyway, the long and short of it is, we were talking and I was driving in a car with him. He was driving, this Fijian guy. It was actually over the weekend. And I noticed it was a rainy night, very, very rainy. And we're riding. It was almost like, you know, and I look over on his windshield. There's like a book. So I said to him, is that a Bible? He said, yes, it is. I said, are you a Methodist? He says, yes, I am. I said, how did you know? He said, how do you know I'm a Methodist? I said, well, because I spent years in the islands, and I know most of the Fijians who were Christians are Methodists because they were the first, blah, blah, blah. So talking, and I said to him, in addition to Christianity, you still have much of your original belief system and religion in Fiji, don't you? He said, yes, we do. And I said, well, what is your belief system in Fiji prior to the arrival of the Christian missionaries? And he thought for a long while as we rode in the rain and I watched the wipers move back and forth. I wasn't anxious at all because I've been in the islands for so long. I know how the people think and I know the cadence of their mind. So I didn't expect an immediate, sharp, you know, wise guy answer in the form of a jousting match. I thought the man was actually thinking about what I asked him and was going to give me a legitimate answer. And he answered in a way that which I thought was applicable to the show. He said, in Fiji, we believe that our spirit and the land, the soil, is one. I said, oh, okay, blood and soil, here we go. And I said, there is the essence of my show, Borders, Language, Culture. I have been preaching for 15 years about the attachment to the American soil. And I have been ridiculed by the internationalists who sneer at you and sneer at me for being nationalists, who they call us blood and soil Americans, as though that's a crime, blood and soil. I don't know what they believe in. I haven't any idea what they believe in. But do you understand that the essence of a man's country is basically him? His flesh is the country? At a certain point, you and the country are one. You're not you can't be removed from it without dying. A piece of you dies if you're ripped out of your land. Now, this is why when – you may not know this, but there was a coup in Fiji not too long ago. And that is because the power structure was about to change where they try to put people from India into the leadership of the Fiji Islands, and that the people wouldn't accept it. It was unacceptable, and they had a revolution over it. Now, I'm neutral on the issue of Indians and Fijians. I had friends on both sides. I didn't have one enemy. I know there was great antipathy there. And that's because the Fijians had occupied the islands for thousands of years. Thousands of years. And then in the 1890s, there came a boatload of indentured workers from India. They were brought in as slaves, fundamentally, the Indians. And they worked sugar plantations for the colonialists, the European colonialists. And they were such hard workers, they saved every rupee and every penny and every pound. And eventually the Indian people worked hard to the point where we can never comprehend. They saved money and eventually they became small shopkeepers. Then eventually they bought the sugar farm. Then they bought the businesses. And then the Indian people wound up running the economy of the island. And the Fijian was still satisfied because he didn't lose his land yet. And that was because of the wisdom of the colonial system in Fiji, which was unique in the entire colonial world. See, in other parts of the world, the people were disenfranchised from their land by the European colonialists. Their land was stolen from them. Fiji was unique, and I've heard theories as to why, some comedic, some otherwise. But the British did not permit the wholesale sale of the land to foreigners in Fiji. Consequently, their large landholders were primarily Fijians who held them for generations. And the Fijian felt, hey, you know what, if the Indian wants to run a store in town or run a plantation, we don't really care as long as we own the land because it's our land. But then what happened is there was an attempt to turn the leadership of the country over to the Indian people. Then there was a coup. Now that brings us right to America right now. There's an attempt to turn the leadership of America over to foreign powers right now. If it hasn't already occurred, and I'm not so sure it hasn't already occurred, I don't think it has to physically occur for it to have actually occurred. We already know that 50% of our bonds are held by China. I think the number is that high. God knows what percent of our banks are owned by Saudi Arabia. So I think already the country's been turned over to foreign powers. The only thing is that we have the charade, the puppet show of an election to make us believe that we still are in charge of our own country. But many of us understand this. And that's why in many ways there's great sadness in the land today and great anger. And that is because we have had a coup in this country and we don't even know it. Some of us sense it. Some of us sense it. We no longer make electronics. Soon we won't be making – how much steel is made here anymore? How many ships are still built in America? Will we still be able to make a car in 5 years with the current leadership and Goldman Sachs? people are asking. When will it end? What happens when it is all over? Who controls our destiny? What happens to our Bill of Rights? What happens to our Constitution? Well, about what's happening to your borders and your language. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Since I am not going to talk about politics to any extent, Osama, I'm not going to talk about Barack Hussein Osama, I will not talk about, or Hillary Clinton. I mean, please give me a break. I'm going to talk about, now I'm going to talk about Nero and ancient Rome for just a minute or two, and I'll show you why in a minute. I'm going to read you something. Nero and the Year of the Four Emperors. Nero's unpopularity brought the rule of Augustus's family to an end. Nero's unpopularity brought the rule of Augustus's family to an end and plunged the empire into civil war. Why am I referring to Nero? And what is the parallel to today? Nero's unpopularity brought the rule of Augustus's family to an end and plunged the empire into civil war. I think you could pretty much follow that one. You don't need to have a PhD in political science to understand how history is repeating itself on a small scale, of course. Chris in Cincinnati, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I am Indian, born of Indian parents, and I just had some comments on the Hindu gods you were talking about earlier.
Right.
You know, it's easy to make fun of these things, but really, you know, they all have all these physical attributes of the gods have some kind of symbolic meaning. For example,
but you see, you missed my entire you missed the whole thing. I knew this would happen. I knew somebody would take me literally instead of understanding what I was saying, which, you know, unfortunately, you didn't see the bigger picture. Didn't you hear the bigger picture? Didn't you hear me joking about three heads and many arms? You didn't understand the joke?
I figured I didn't know if you knew the deeper symbolic meaning of these things.
No, I don't think you understood what I was doing either. I mean, if you want to be fair to the discussion. This isn't the first time you've listened to the show, or is it?
No, I've been hearing the show for 4 years.
All right, well, so you know I've talked in glowing terms about, you know, the Indian people and how well they do and how educated they are. I hope you've heard that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
All right, so therefore, you'll have to understand that when I say the feminists may one day demand that the god Shiva statues be changed because three heads and 17 arms may be anti-feminist, I hope you'll understand where I was coming from.
Oh, yeah.
Good. As long as you understand it was a joke, that's all. Tomorrow I get the Hindu Society, the Hindi Society of America, 1-800-449-8255. Portland, Maine. Is this Maine or it has to be Portland, Maine? Jamie, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Mike. I've been listening to you for years. Most of the time, I have to admit that most of what you're talking about goes completely over my head. But today, when you were talking about Rush Limbaugh, and you happened to do the Republicans good, Democrats bad, and I noticed the sheep sounds in your voice, was that a direct correlation with Animal Farm?
I don't know, but how can anyone listen to somebody either side who tells you that if you vote Democrat, the world will be a better place, and if you vote Republican, it'll be a better place? How could you believe this?
When we've seen
the rapaciousness of both parties here, with very, very few exceptions. Absolutely. The Southeastern senators are the only ones I trust in the whole country. Thanks for the call. I got a migraine. The minute I started talking, not only did I get a migraine from that I got a mild hernia from it. I felt an old injury, an old athletic injury come back from that conversation. I injured not only my psyche, but my body. My body itself went out. I may have to get a truss after that call. Yeah, very fun. No, I swear there's an ache in my lower groin from that call. The minute he mentioned and asked me a distinct question about, I swear to God, maybe I should move to Spain. And you can't move there anymore either. It's like the new Andalusia. They want Andalusia now. The Mauritanians want Andalusia all over again. They weren't happy enough slaughtering 800 years ago. They had to slaughter again the Spaniards. They blew up the Madrid railway station, and immediately they threw out the conservative government right after that, so they won. They put in a socialist. So, you know, they learn. It's little by little. They got plenty of time. They've been doing it for 1,200 years, so what's their rush? They figure the West is weak, filled with charlatans and frauds, and then we don't have the time. We can't, you know, they can wait us out. I hope they're wrong. I hope they're wrong. I don't want to say my phone number again. The Big Boot. The Big Boot. What would you like to talk about? Los Angeles, Mike, 8:30 on the dial. Welcome. What's on your mind?
I'm talking about life, and I think you are Don Quixote, because he's a tragic figure who remembered the world for its noblest terms, and the world changed on him, and he went nuts because he no longer fit into that world. But the new world that he was going into, as crazy as it was no more real than the old world that he had imagined.
Whoa. So I can see, Mike, you read the book.
Yes, I have, and I'm from the Bronx, and that's why I listened to you, and that's why I read the book. Because it's like...
Wait now. When did you read Don Quixote, Mike?
In high school, before high school, and I try to read it like every
10 years
or so.
Unbelievable. I think you've called the show before, right?
I did in 2000.
Whoa. Now, wait a minute. You're not of Puerto Rican ancestry, are you?
Yes, I am.
Well, I have a pretty good memory. I don't know how I remember these things, but I can sometimes whack them right out of the park. I can whack them out of the city. I remember you 8 years ago.
Yeah, you told me I was crazy thinking that we could do anything in Afghanistan. What are you going to do to them but throw refrigerators on top of them?
Hey, could you do me a favor, Mike? Tell me what you said about Don Quixote again. What you just said when you came on the show was so brilliantly perfect that, okay, let me see if I remember. You said that Don Quixote was about a tragic figure, and I'm this tragic figure like Don Quixote, because he was – finished the rest of it.
He went crazy because he used to read books about chivalry and about the way he thought things were. But those ideals were noble ideals, about him wanting the girl Dulcinea, about wanting to attract her with old-fashioned values. But those things never existed. They only existed in the books about chivalry, the same way that when you think the 1950s existed in a certain way, it didn't exist that way for people like me, and it really didn't exist that way for you. But when you think about it at your age now, it was so much better than what you're looking at in the future, what's coming up now. And it's so scary. You don't understand it. I don't understand it. And we think we're sane, but to everybody else, we've just gone nuts.
Oh, man, you are good. I feel like applauding you. I haven't applauded a caller ever, Mike. That was so good. So you're like an ordinary guy. No one even knows how smart you are, right?
No, Mike, I need to ask you a question, though.
No, wait. No, I got to ask you a question. I'll bet you're an ordinary guy with an ordinary life, right?
I used to.
No, now. I'm saying right now you're an ordinary man, right, with an ordinary life?
That's what I'm trying to tell you is I lost my job like 3 years ago because I stood up for kids because I didn't want to lower the standards. And when
how are you so insightful for an so-called ordinary man that you can read a book, a classical book like Don Quixote, and apply it to a talk show and come up with a conclusion like that? How can you do that?
Because it repeats itself. It's just there's the same tragic issues. That is the greatest novel.
Yeah, but you're seeing yourself in a way in Don Quixote, aren't you, Mike?
Michael, we all are.
Yes, we're all Don Quixote. We're all tilting at windmills. We're all living in a dream world. You know, Mike, I've done a show where I said the America that I talk about never existed. Have you ever heard me do that?
I probably didn't hear that same word.
I've said it. I said, I think the America I'm talking about never existed. So I know where you're coming from. Well, maybe we'll both wind up in the same asylum, Mike. That'll be the only salvation.
I think so. Even now, I'm reading the Huxley book that you're talking about. I was reading.
Mike, email me. Email. Guys, keep Mike on the line. I got to start a dialogue. What a brilliant caller. Bravo, Mike. Bravo.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Savage Nation. We're talking about everything today. I can't even review what we've been talking about. I refer you to reading a little bit of Roman history if you want to understand where we are. And I would say that we are in comparison to ancient Rome, we're about where the troubled century was and the slide toward crisis. That's where we are today, the slide toward crisis. And just then in ancient Rome, the army was a major power broker and always had been in the imperial game. But today, the army is no longer the major power broker that it once was for a number of reasons, and that is a real terrifying problem in the United States of America. I do know that the army or the military still has power. I can tell you that I didn't know that until I saw that the Goldman Sachs desire to put the final sword into the bull of America by transferring the 3Com company to the Chinese military was stopped. Probably by, I can't imagine what a novel it could make. What went on in the corridors of power to have blocked that deal? I don't know who the hero is inside the Pentagon, but my hat's off to you, sir, whoever you may be, or whoever the generals are, who stopped those Wall Street gangsters from so weakening us that we could never recover. And my hat goes off to those powers that we've never met and never will meet. That's all I can say. Ossie in Ocala, Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure. It's not only a pleasure, it's an honor for me to be able to speak to you. I've listened to you for 3 years. I know my English is not that great, but I called you because I know that you are a
Your English is better than the president's. Don't be ashamed. Go on.
You are a man of the world. You are not just a man that speaks for America, but you speak for the world. I have listened to you talk about problems over in Africa more than I have ever heard any person talk about them in America. And that just put a big glow on my face. I'm from Cameroon. I could not imagine you talking about Cameroon just like you were born in Cameroon one time when you were on air. And it just touched my mind so deep.
Well, that's very nice.
That
I mean, I don't even remember what the topic was, but I don't think it takes a genius to figure out what's going on when you open your eyes and take a look. It's pretty much the same problem worldwide. If it's not the Islamo-fascist killing Christians, why then it's the tribal chiefs stealing the food from the poor. It's not much different anywhere on earth, Ossie.
Absolutely, Dr. Savage. I applaud you one time when you called upon people not to give money to the African leaders, and no one would listen to you, and they just keep pouring money to the African leaders. It never gets to the people. The people don't have...
Never. Never. Not a dime trickles down to the poor on the bottom. And that's why I have such distemper towards the Hollywood frauds who are continuously making their trek to Africa as though to show they're in solidarity with the poor African. But what effect do they really have? What dent do they really make in poverty, I wonder?
Nothing, Dr. Savage.
Nothing. 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 If they sold one of their bracelets and gave the money to the villagers, it would be better than what they're doing. All of the crappios and the other one with the 10 children that goes over there every other day to wave around her magic wand. Then they leave and the people still have flies in their eyes. Sad, sad, sad. Thank you for the compliments. Evansville, Indiana. Preston, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Dr. Savage, my wife and I heard you talking about you wanting a new microphone.
Yes.
A $5,000 Neumann microphone.
Well, I'm looking at the catalog. It looks impressive. What do you think?
It's going to be way overkill for what you need. That type of microphone is for recording concerts, to be suspended from ceilings.
You mean to pick up virtually every sound in the orchestra kind of thing?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I'm on an RE20 right now, the standard RE27. It's the workhorse of talk radio. What about the Neumann, the $1,500 Neumann? Is that a little too sensitive as well?
That's probably getting back into the realm where we're talking, where we need to be. The thing that's got me a little confused is the multi-pickup patterns. Why would a talk radio microphone need multi-pickup patterns?
No. I'm not looking for a multi-pickup pattern. I'm looking for better tone, better tonality, if I could achieve it. And I'm not so sure I can achieve it with a Neumann, but I figured we'd try it. I have a wonderful Electro Voice RE27ND, which I've used for years in all my studios. But my eye right now is on the BCM-104 Neumann, and I'm curious if you're familiar with that one.
Not familiar with that one, but I've had a lot of experience with Electro Voice, and they make a fun.
All right, well, we're gonna try it out on the show. One last quick call right now. Jim, WOR, New York City. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I wonder if you mind talking about your experiences in the Marquesas.
Wow. Okay. What, where, how, when do we begin? Let's begin at the grave of Robert Louis Stevenson. Is that a good starting point?
Yeah. How about Melville?
Well, okay. I mean, we can do it all. But Hiva'oa, have you been to Hiva'oa, Nuku'hiva?
I've never been there. I've only written a book about a warship that went there in the 19th century.
Only? Okay, my friend. You're way ahead of me. No, I'm not one of these people who say that if you haven't been there, you can't talk about it. I mean, that's ludicrous because there's books, there's other ways of being there without actually being there. And some people are there and they're not there anyway. You know that as well.
Yeah, well, the sailors on this warship happened to love the islands because, you know, the women, I guess there was open marriage there and it was luscious. The captain had a hard time getting them off.
Well, yes, you're talking about Mutiny on the Bounty and stopping in Tahiti, but the Marquesas. Well, let me give you this. The islands in the Marquesas are very intriguing. They're the furthest islands from a continental landmass on Earth. I sailed by ship from Los Angeles, and it was a modern ocean liner. It was a Royal Viking ship. It took 10 days at sea to get to the Marquesas. That's how far away they are. They're totally isolated and unique geographically in the sense that they have no surrounding fringing reef, no coral reef around them. They drop off right into the ocean from where they are, which is very unique as well. And the people are very unique. The men are extremely photogenic and handsome, almost on the level of ancient gods. They look like, the traditional look of the men there is godlike. When you statues, let's say Greek statues of men. The women are not so fortunate for some strange reason, but the men are unique in that look. Now, of course, they have fallen on bad times. So I'm talking to the people. I'm giving you a quick thumbnail sketch. You want me to talk about the botany, the flora, the fauna? I don't know what else to talk about in the Savage Nation.
Did they still practice a kind of open marriage with strangers when you were there?
I wouldn't know. That's not what I went there for, and it wasn't my orientation. I was looking at plants, not the anatomy of the women, but having said that, we'll talk about the Marquesas again at another time. We're just short on time. Right next is a big interview I did earlier today on the Islamofascists and Al-Qaeda and what they have in store for you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The socialist, internationalist, liberal media tells us nothing but bad news about Iraq. But a recent report from Rowan Scarborough shows us that Al-Qaeda is actually much weaker than we've been led to believe. He's here to talk about it. Rowan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Good to be with you again.
Your recent article from Insight talks about a faltering Al-Qaeda in Iraq due to the surge under General Petraeus. Where are we getting this information?
It's some of the best information that our commanders in Iraq can get. It comes right from the terrorists themselves, and it's not in any written journals. It's not interrogating them after they're imprisoned, where some of the stuff they say might be suspect. This is their words uttered on cell phones and in emails to each other, that we are, that through our new technologies, we are able to intercept and translate and get to commanders very quickly. And it shows that Al-Qaeda themselves are saying they're in horrible shape, that U.S. forces and Iraqi forces are killing them by the score, that they're being disrupted from their operation centers in Baghdad and in Diyala province and are being forced to move north, and that they're running out of people. So I think it's one of the best pieces of evidence that our commanders have, that the surge is working against Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and that they're on the run, and that they're, and that we're winning. We haven't won yet in our battle with Al-Qaeda in Iraq, but the intercepts showed that we are winning.
This system that we're using to get this info, is it something new?
Well, it's relatively new in the sense that we have built up, with a lot of investments in technology and in manpower, they have built up in Iraq a very complex system of being an integrated system of being able to intercept communications. It's done on the tactical level with special operations forces, and then it's done on more of the strategic level where the National Security Agency is able to penetrate these cell phone networks. And then tactically, when troops are able to capture cell phones or able to download information that give them cell phone numbers of suspected terrorists, we're able to program that into computers and then listen for when those numbers are called and listen to the conversation. So it's a lot better. We've been trying to intercept communications all along, but it's just gotten a lot better as time has gone on. And now the people that I speak with tell me that we've really got the place wired. And it's difficult for Al-Qaeda to talk to each other in Iraq without us being able to hone in on the people we want to listen to. And this is why modernizing FISA, the law that regulates listening in on phone calls of American citizens, it's so important the commanders feel to update this law to match the technology today of the Internet and cell phones, because that law was written basically when you had to penetrate a landline and then listen to a call. What we have today now with the Internet is you have terrorists who will get an American server. They'll get Google or they'll get AOL. And if we don't know the identity of the person using that server, the assumption is that they're an American person. And as an American person, they're covered over under FISA, which means commanders in Iraq or troops in Iraq have to fill out paperwork and submit it to the NSA, and they submit it to the Justice Department to show that there's probable cause that we should intercept this email. Well, under the new law, which the Democrats in the House have blocked, it's streamlined to where the head of the National Intelligence Service can okay the request very, very quickly, and they can go to the email server and look at these emails. And in this time of war, when you need to make very, very quick decisions on going after Al-Qaeda, that's why this law in the view of commanders in Iraq needs to be modernized.
So holding up the new wiretapping law can have an effect on the war itself?
There is no doubt, because we have come across emails in Iraq that we suspect are terrorists, but they have an American server. They have a Google server or an AOL server or Yahoo. So we have to assume, to comply with the law, that they're an American person, which means they're covered by FISA, and you have to do the paperwork to try to show probable cause that they're a terrorist. With under the new law that the Democrats are blocking in the House, you don't have to go through all that paperwork. And I can tell you, we know that when we were hunting soldiers in southern Iraq who had been kidnapped, this was one of the bureaucratic snags that the military and the NSA had to go through. They had to fill out paperwork to monitor some emails that they wanted to target. So the FISA needs to be modernized to keep up with cell phones and the Internet, both of which were not around when the law was written 30 years ago.
Doesn't the NSA have an office specifically dealing with this type of information gathering?
Yeah, they do. They have set up procedures where they can – well, the NSA's job is to intercept communications. I mean, that's what they do. They break codes. And they have an office that deals with FISA. that the point is, though, it's bureaucratic. You still have to go to the Justice Department and make your case, because they're the ones that eventually have to go to a panel of judges or a judge and say, hey, we did this, and we want you to prove it after the fact, and we had good reason. Under the modernization, they will not have to do that, and that's the key point. They skip a lot of the bureaucracy, and they go right into the email or right to the cell phone, because a lot of these email and cell phones, although the calls are between people in Iraq, they are routed through our country. And when they're routed through our country, the FISA law is triggered.
Do we have other evidence on weakening al-Qaeda in Iraq besides email and cell phone conversations?
Besides these intercepts, there is another body of evidence that al-Qaeda has been greatly damaged in Iraq. In November, we were able to capture a diary written by a leader in northern Iraq and a memo written by an al-Qaeda leader in al-Anbar. And in both of those documents, they were bemoaning the sorry state of al-Qaeda in their area and all the problems they were having. And so these intercepted calls are more contemporaneous. Instead of being 3 or 4 months old, you know, they're happening within recent days and recent weeks. And so it's a great body of evidence taken together to show that we've done a lot of damage to al-Qaeda. And also my sources tell me that it's becoming more and more difficult for them to recruit the suicide bombers, and that, after all, that's their number one weapon, al-Qaeda, to put a bomb on someone and send them into a market. And this bombing campaign that they've been on in al-Qaeda has revealed al-Qaeda to be basically murder incorporated, and the Arab world sees this, and they are more reluctant to go into Iraq and kill people. And that's why they've had to turn to, in one case, the two mentally retarded women. In another case, there is video of them training boys to be operatives in their organization. So al-Qaeda is being killed off in Iraq, and it's having trouble replenishing its numbers.
Well, these two examples show not only their horrible barbarism, but their desperation as well.
Exactly. I mean, if you have to resort to retarded women, and if you have to resort to training boys to be your next cadre of consumer suicide bombers, then you're desperate. I mean, you're running out of recruiting Islamists from Saudi Arabia and North Africa, where most of them have come from. You're having trouble doing that, so you're turning to sort of like what during the Civil War when the Confederacy had to start turning to 11-year-olds to go into the battlefield. You're hurting, and so this is more evidence, and it's probably a good argument for Republicans as why this is not the time to pull out of Iraq. If anything, this is the time to press and get it done with once and for all.
We need the real news from somewhere, Rowan. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
All right, Michael. It was great talking to you.
Savage.
So what do you think it means to be a conservative? The liberals would have you believe one thing, but you and I know better. Selwyn Duke has written a fascinating article on what it means to be a conservative, and he's here to talk with us about it. Selwyn, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Good to be on with you again.
So the reports of conservatism's early death are greatly exaggerated, huh?
Michael, not that long ago, many were reading liberalism's epitaph. We had those Reagan years, the Republican Revolution of 1994, the retreat of the gun control nuts after Al Gore's 2000 defeat, and President Bush's two successful presidential runs. And many thought conservatism was carrying the day. Well, it was wishful thinking. Because, and the Savage Nation understands this well, with conservatives like President Bush and many of the other Republicans, who needs liberals?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Of course, look, I know the media portrays the Republicans as the party of snake handlers and moonshine, but there's a big difference between image and reality. For instance, take the budget. Bush has just spun the odometer, and now our budget is $3 trillion, the highest ever in our history. And then, on issues that really matter to us, those pertaining to the very survival of our culture, the primacy of English, multiculturalism, the attack on Christianity, the Republicans are found wanting. And then consider illegal immigration. Both the president and John McCain, as you know, support a form of amnesty. But despite this, many paint America as being under the sway of rightist politics. Now, why do they do this? Well, first, some liberals know that the best way to ensure constant movement toward the left is by portraying the status quo as dangerously far right. You see, if you repeatedly warn that we teeter on the brink of rightist dominance, people will say, hey, to achieve balance, we've got to tack further left. Then they move more toward your mythical center. Then also, we have conservatives. Many of them just want to view the world as the happy place they'd like to live in. And they make a common mistake. They confuse Republican with conservative, party with principles, and electoral wars with the cultural one. But there's also another factor. You can confuse conservative with correct. Now, what am I talking about? When is the right not right, you ask? When it has been defined by the left. Now, Michael, here's my point. Generally speaking, the definition of conservative isn't constant. It's fluid. It changes from time to time and from place to place. Now, I know we often associate conservatism with small government and respect for tradition.
Sounds like a good definition to me.
Well, that's true, Michael. But, you know, here's my point. There have been other kinds of conservatives, too. And what I want to do here is get people to think about what the word conservative really means. So consider this. In the Soviet Union, a conservative was, guess what? A communist. Then, think about the Dutch politician Pim Fortuyn, who was assassinated in 2002. Now, at the time, BBC News ran a headline saying something like, Dutch far-right leader shot dead. Now, I mention this because Fortuyn was quite liberal by our standards. What was he? He was a pro-abortion, openly homosexual, ex-sociology professor, branded a rightist, mainly because he wanted to stem the flow of Muslim immigration into Holland. And, get this, his fear was what? That zealous Muslims posed a threat to the nation's liberal social structure. So here's the question. What definition of conservative would a communist or European statist conform to? The answer is, the one that says a conservative is one who favors maintenance of the status quo. And this brings us to a central point. Now listen closely. As society is successfully transformed by those who hate the status quo changes. This means that the great defender ideology of the status quo, conservatism, will change with it. Okay, now I want to quote the great philosopher G.K. Chesterton. He said something that was quite relevant here. Progress should mean that we're always changing the world to fit the vision. Instead, we're always changing the vision. And here's what we have to remember. Both liberals and conservatives have shape-shifting visions. And this is because the definitions of conservative and liberal are determined by the position, if you will, of our political spectrum. Shift that spectrum left or right by altering the collective ideology of the nation, and the definitions of those two words will change to the same degree. And this is why a Pim Fortuyn is viewed as conservative in Western Europe. Now, here's how I like to put it. Liberals, what do? Liberals construct their vision based on opposition to the conservative one. Conservatives' vision is a product of the now accepted decades-old vision of the left. So it's ironic, but liberals promote today's liberal vision, and conservatives defend yesterday's liberal vision. Okay. At this point, Michael, I want to quote Chesterton again. He also said, "The whole modern world has divided itself into conservatives and progressives. The business of progressives is to go on making mistakes. The business of the conservatives is to prevent the mistakes from being corrected." So, it occurs to me that maybe one reason we're losing the culture war is that it's easier to convince people to try new liberal mistakes than to retain old liberal mistakes that have been tried and determined wrong. But listen, either way, we have to change our thinking radically. And when I say us, I mean we conservatives, we traditionalists, I should say.
But Selwyn, wars are not won by being defensive. That's what's wrong with conservatives.
Well, you're right, Michael, but unfortunately, conservatives are seldom anything but defensive because they've been conditioned to mistake defense for offense. For example, When 13 states voted to ban faux marriage in 2004, some proclaimed it a great victory for conservatism. But it only was a victory if the conservatism you subscribe to merely involves maintenance of a liberal status quo. Think about it. It was a successful defensive action, not an offensive one. Who was proposing the societal change the vote was a response to? The left was. What kind of change was it? One that would move us more in the liberal direction. And it's always that way. Look, here are some examples. We play defense when, instead of striving to eliminate hate crime laws, which we should do, we merely do things like fight proposals to make transgendered a protected category. We play defense when we accept the Federal Department of Education and simply use it to affect conservative, quote-unquote, education reform, like, for instance, the No Child Left Behind Act. And we play defense when we preach against illegal immigration while accepting a culture-destroying legal immigration regime. Now, here's the difference. Here's how the left operates. If their scheme to legally redefine marriage fails today, they'll try again tomorrow. If a socialized medicine plan doesn't pass, they'll try again in 5 or 10 years. If a new tax is too rich for present tastes, they'll just wait for a more gluttonous palate. Or maybe they'll sneak a different new tax into an innocuous-sounding bill or accept a slight increase to an old tax. And then another and another and another. They simply wait for the political spectrum to shift a bit further left. And this brings me to another important point, Michael. We often talk of compromise, but does compromising with people who always advance but never retreat constitute fairness? My point is, the left proposes policy, right? Settles for a half measure, and we leave the table thinking it's an equitable outcome. But the problem is that since virtually all the changes suggested are leftist in nature, constant compromise and granting of concessions guarantees what? Constant movement toward the left. So you know what happens? Here's how I'd put it. We see formerly secure territory that's now under attack, and then we repel a few of the enemy's charges. And then we say, oh, what a great victory. But what we don't realize is that we're defining victory only as a reduction in the rate of loss of our heartland, while the enemy defines it as the expansion of its empire. And you know what I call this? Compromising our way to tyranny. It's like this. You'll like this analogy, Michael, because I know you're a boxing fan. It's like a young boxer who never throws punches and, because of this, becomes really good at blocking vicious blows and inured to taking them. Well, he comes out of the ring with a twinkle in black and blue eyes. He flashes a smile, revealing 2 lost teeth, proudly shows off bruised forearms and says, look, Dad, I blocked 99% of the punches today. This is my greatest victory ever.
God, it's an insane way to define victory.
Well, yeah, Michael, it's a very insane way to define victory. I mean, it might be a figurative victory as far as exhibiting defensive skill goes. But in reality, fighting this way means nothing but slow, torturous losses. It means nothing but the fact that you're going to get hurt. And one day, it might even mean a knockout. Now, all of this places our current presidential race in perspective. You know how some Republicans lament the absence of good conservative, quote-unquote, primary contenders? I mean, they often act as if our statist frontrunners are visited upon us by an invisible hand. They act like these politicians succeed despite the culture and not because of it. But the hard, cold truth is, these politicians are just products of a society that has long been in the grip of leftist operatives. And I'm talking about academia, the media, Hollywood. I'm talking about social engineers who've been crafting their message, who've been scheming, indoctrinating, and manipulating the public for decades. And here's another thing, Michael. Listen, can we really say these candidates aren't conservative? I mean, with a small c. Look, with the political spectrum having shifted so far left, maybe people like Bush, McCain, and Huckabee really are today's conservatives, defenders of a statist status quo. Think about it. Perhaps, just maybe, people like us are something else.
That's an interesting theory.
Well, yeah, it's something to consider. I mean, after all, think about this. A while back, I criticized Mitt Romney for forcing the people of Massachusetts to buy health insurance. But get this. A recent poll indicates that a majority of Republicans even support such coercion. Well, all I can say is, if some of these people are conservatives, I certainly am not one. You know what? I'm a revolutionary. I don't want to preserve the status quo. I want to overthrow it. I want to pull the statist weeds up by the roots and burn them in freedom's fire, just like our founding fathers did. Listen, do you think they were conservatives, our founding fathers? Conservatives don't start revolutions. They simply make sure their shackles are made no heavier. So we have to remember something. Political victory rests on cultural victory. And how do you achieve cultural victory? First, you have to change your mentality. So I say this. We have only two choices here. We can be revolutionary, or we can be wrong.
Selwyn Duke, always intriguing. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
Savage.
Savage Nation. I guess when the presidential election is over next November, we can, whoever wins, we can call it we can give it a new name, the Triumph of the Shill. That might work. Instead of the Triumph of the Will, we can call it the Triumph of the Shill, because, you know, that's how most of us see it, but and there's nothing new about that. I mean, why do you assume the presidency is such an important job? It's sort of a figurehead. It has been for a long figurehead position, like the Queen of England. Black on Huxley. Steve, welcome to the Savage Nation from KNEW San Francisco. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm just wanted to say real quick that being black in America, I'm the real Bernard Coyote. And then the windmills that I'm fighting.
Wait, I'm sorry. You're the real who?
Bernard Coyote. You know, like Don Coyote, Bernard from Brave New World. And
oh, okay, Bernard. I missed that. I couldn't hear you that well. So you, as a black man, feel what, as the perennial outsider?
Well, because this is now the windmills that I'm fighting would be feminism and socialism. And this is a mantra that kind of destroyed our communities. And
but wait a minute. But your leadership, so-called, would not say that you're fighting feminism and socialism. They'd say you're fighting white racism.
See, but that's why I'm Bernard Coyote, because it's the windmill. It's imagined in my mind, according to
right.
them.
Right. They've tilted the black male at the fans of the windmill rather than at the real enemies of the black parent, the black father. The enemies of the black father is not the white male. The enemies of the black father are the feminism and the socialism that you're talking about. They're the ones who denuded you and stripped you of your family connections.
Exactly. And this has already been here for over 30 years.
Well, what that really means in a nutshell, instead of speaking in generality so people don't think we don't know what we're talking about, before the Great Society of the 60s, meaning the introduction of socialism light by LBJ, there were tens of thousands of small businesses owned by black families. Okay, the barbershop is an example. I'm talking about tens of thousands of small businesses. And they disappeared when the Great Society appeared and said, let Big Brother take care of you. Isn't that what you're saying?
Exactly. And more than that, too, because two things that really hit home to the black community. And if you don't accept this, then they try to tell you you're not black and you don't belong and you're not going to fit in.
All right. So you're an outsider. You're a man without a country, in other words. Welcome to the club, Steve. But that's because you're an individual who has a brain and thinks and doesn't have groupthink. You're always going to wander the earth alone. You know, it's a very difficult place to be when you start to think for yourself. People get a little intimidated by you. They think you're odd, you're weird. You know, I'm sure you've heard it all, correct?
I've heard that and a lot more.
All right. Yeah, weirdo. You weirdo. Welcome to Weirdos Anonymous. Maybe I can reprogram the show. I'm going to re-identify the show. We can rechange it from the when one of the liberals win, one of the three liberals win, either Obama, who I affectionately call now Osama, or Hillary or McCain. When one of the three liberals from Goldman Sachs wins, we can rebrand the show. Instead of calling it the Savage Nation, we'll have to rename it. We'll call it Weirdos Anonymous. Colorado, Chad, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for taking my call. A few weeks ago, there was a medical condition you weren't sure the exact name of. It was orchitis from orchid. It's a swelling that only...
No. I'm sure of the name. I know orchitis. I know exactly what a swelling of the testicles.
It was terribly painful. I didn't hear you finish that call or that...
Who was I referring to? Who was suffering from orchitis?
I'm not sure how it came up, but it wasn't on the tip of your tongue. You said, I know what the name is.
All right. Well, I'm familiar with the condition. So what's on your mind?
Anguish. You have said so many times that we are just feeling this great anguish because of the state of affairs, and I'm with you. I feel I'm depressed about the...
You're not alone. Welcome to Anguish Anonymous.
That's all I wanted to say is you're right on. You strike the nerve. I hate that our position, which is for all the things that are good in the world, are marginalized and
marginalized, right, and turned into something evil. Correct. Everything that we believe in, from the flag to the family, is being trashed by Hillary and Obama in every so-called debate. Everything that is sacred to us, blood and soil, is debased by Hillary and Obama. Borders, language, culture, debased by the government media complex in these endless show debates, which are being used only to give people a choice between Obama or Hillary, and making the third guy not even existent. Thanks for the call. The whole object of this lengthy, extraordinarily lengthy lead up to the presidential election is to introduce two very tepid, below par candidates to the American people and let you believe, because you see them so often, that they're actually presidential timbre, of presidential level. They're not. They're not of presidential level. Both of them have shown themselves, of anything, to be unqualified for the position, by the way. Both of them have shown themselves unqualified to be the president of the United States. But the reverse was exactly why they've been running this forever, which is to make you think, since they're debating to be the president, that they could be the president. Why, that would be the equivalent of taking a bright college student and say, let's put you in the mix. My, you can talk? Wow, maybe you could be president too. No, ladies and gentlemen, the more we see of them, the less we like of them. And in the background, there's the old man creaking around like the Tin Man in Alice in Wonderland, and that's John McCain. Again, I say, when the election is over, whoever it may be, we will have a new winner, and we will call it the triumph of the shill, not the triumph of the will. MichaelSavage.com. You have to re-enter it. You have to re-enter it. You have to re-enter it. Don't go to your old entry.
Savage.